columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.
Go to 1043thefan.com and subscribe to The Fan Daily for the latest columns, blogs, news, videos, and more sent directly to your inbox every weekday morning.
Can we be there?
We are here. Oh,
just think of the time. All in love so strange. Said you never know. While I try my best, hey.
What a treat we have today. Stokely is off doing Stokely things.
Golf?
Maybe.
Palling around with Peyton Manning?
Maybe. He never likes when I put anything he's doing on Front Street, so I just do the old, like, you know.
Stokely things.
He's on assignment, is what you're supposed to say.
Ah.
He's okay. He's on a special assignment, doing some research of maybe a famous course. I don't know. So, Chad Brown, what's up, dude?
It's been a while, man.
It's been a couple months.
How you doing, bro?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Good. I've enjoyed your Twitter updates with the little man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Got the... My man, it's crazy. I know you've already gone through all this, so there's nothing I could say that would be some sort of revelation, but maybe just like a rewind of time for you. I'll share this with you. Within the past 4 days, we have crossed through a seminal moment at home that he now knows how to get out of the crib and just be thump, tears, holy crap, he's out. He can open door. I mean, it's scary. I mean, it really is. Like, it's kind of scary. He's getting big.
So mobile. The next parenting decision is, do I make it easier for him to get out of the crib, and what do I do to direct his path once he gets out directly to our room? So it's almost like training a puppy sometimes, you know. So I remember those moments with my kids, and you know, it's been a long time. My kids are grown. My daughter's 23, my son is 20, and I actually saw my niece maybe a couple of weeks ago, and that feeling of holding, you know, a 14, 15, 16-month-old in your arms. That's awesome, man. It's been a long time since I've done it. So I'm happy I had that experience, and my kids are grown now and all that. But the precious moments of just holding on to a baby, man.
Sure.
There's some truly amazing feelings that come in life. And, you know, sacking a quarterback and bringing 65,000 people to their feet, that's one of them. But holding a baby in your arms, letting that baby go to sleep in your arms, that's one of them too, man. That's also special.
It is. It's a major bullet point in the human experience. Maybe right at the top of the list.
Yeah.
I'm having so much fun with it. It's challenging, no doubt. And we don't have family around here. So that's a big, you know, it's me and my wife and him.
Right.
Luckily we have, you know, people like Kendall and that help us out sometimes. But it's been different, but it's been awesome. Before we go any further, I got to get your, just with, you know, broad stroke, you are a CU alum. You are a signature alum, as I would like to frame you. Passionate about the program. Where are you at with everything? Now that you've had about a week for everything to settle in, everything that happened with Mel, how he responded to it, your response to it, and where you're at right now in the coaching search.
As far as Mel goes, I've got no problem with a coach trying to, you know, listen to other offers and, you know, increase his pay, increase the pool for his assistant coach. I've got no problem with that. Using his leverage to do that. There's another team interested. Listen to that offer. Bring that back to the athletic director. See what we can do. That's the business of college football.
Sure.
Where Mel goes off the track for me is once you issue your statement that you're a Buff for life and all these other things, and then you go back on that one. Once you put your word down, then that's it. You can't go back on that, at least in the way I view things. My football character, my football integrity would not allow me to do that. I certainly would be open to other offers because that's the business of football. Coaches get fired, hired all the time. There's a business around that quote-unquote amateur game. But again, once you put the tweet out and you do the radio hits and you go to the fundraisers, it's done at that point. The entertaining of whatever Michigan State brings back to you the second time is off the table. Hey, man, I'm flattered. That's awesome. But I can't do it. I've already given my word that, you know, to the back to the University of Colorado. So that's the situation on Mel. So disappointed personally in that. Mel and I had a bit of a relationship, and I did not see that side in him and our personal interaction. So I'm disappointed to see that publicly unfold. As far as what's going on now, Rick George and Lance Carl, the athletic director and associate athletic director, they've got a bit of a tough gig here. You know, I think here within the state, there is a desire to somehow try to put the band back together in some ways. So it's all the CU guys or people with CU connections. It's Eric Bieniemies and it's Chivarini and it's Jim Levitt, and you know, who's defensive coordinator that was a part of the Buffs bowl game a couple years ago. So it's guys like that who have some kind of CU ties in the past. And after that, you're now dealing with guys who are on TV. And there's a reason why they're on TV. Not to say that they're not good coaches, and because you're on TV doesn't mean that you can't coach, but there's a reason why they're not on another team, working for their team right now. They're on TV doing what they do. One of those guys, Jim Moore. I know Jim really well. Jim and I climbed Mount Kilimanjaro together.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so Jim's a good guy. I like Jim.
We actually, you and I had him on 2 years ago. Wait, I don't know how I remember this, but me and you were down at Blake Street Tavern one time and had Jim Moore on asking about Josh Rosen a handful of years back.
We talked about all the Pac-12 quarterbacks, exactly, before the draft, around this time of the year. Exactly, yeah. So, how do you find a coach who's not going to use the job as a stepping stone? How do you find a coach who's going to be loyal? You obviously want to hire the best coach you can. And Rick George is phrasing, I think it's who views Colorado as we view it, as a chance to win a national championship, as a great program, as an all-time college football ranked program, which it is.
Mm-hmm.
But currently, it's hard to, you know, have that feeling and impression based on where they've been recently.
Right.
So because of that, you know, I understand where Rick's coming from. I have the same tremendous pride in the program that he does. But how do you bring a coach in who's going to stay for the long haul when, as soon as he has some success, there's going to be programs from other conferences that just simply have more money?
Yeah.
And that's tricky. So that brings you back to the putting the band back together column. Is Eric Bieniemy willing to forego being a pro NFL coach, which we know his goal is, to go back to his alma mater?
That sounds like it's losing steam even as early as this morning, that you've seen the reports coming out. Probably not going to happen.
I'm not sure where these reports are coming from. From my understanding, Rick George and Lance Carl are running a pretty tight ship up there, mm-hmm, as far as letting rumors and information get out. So I don't, everything that I would say at this point is really just speculation. But then you got like Chivarini, who, you know, certainly is loyal as part of the program, but wasn't, you know, considered a head coaching candidate until this whole thing unfolded. So I just don't know. I guess to answer your question, I just don't know.
I want to get back into that at some point during the show, because I have more questions about where the Buffs are at, where they've been, and where they're going. But first, Jeff Breidich speaks. Holy moly, this saga is not slowing down. From spring training, Jeff Breidich into a microphone. We'll go over what he said next. He's been a hot-button topic, and I would say as much of a hot-button topic for a Major League Baseball GM of any market in the country right now.
Oh, no, no doubt.
I mean, he has been a major talking point around here, and, of course, the riff with Nolan Arenado, it has captured all of the all the fans around here that root for the Rockies. I know you and I are definitely in that category. Chad Brown filling in for Brandon Stokely today. Kind of gave a pseudo apology to the fans. Listen close to this one.
I'm sorry that our fans, you know, if they've been, you know, I'm sorry that it went the, you know, this way, and that, you know, if it's caused them angst, or it's, you know, they're our best supporters of Nolan. They're the best supporters of the organization, and you know, certainly you don't want, you know, there to be turmoil or crises or anything like that. You know, sometimes there are our professional disagreements in the business. And, you know, but apart from that, you know, we've never really handled things, you know, internally, publicly. And so, you know, a lot of that is out of respect, right? It's out of respect to the organization. It's out of respect to the players in the organization. And I think it's, you know, appropriate that a lot of inner team business is kept as such. And so, you know, that's why, a big reason why I haven't, you know, been out in making statements, you know, it's keeping with that policy and that best practice policy for us.
Okay, there's a lot there.
to laugh at.
Chad, what do you make of it? Obviously, it turned you off for you to say that.
If your apology has the word if in it, then it's not really an apology. If the fans, if it caused angst, if it... Then you're putting the apology essentially on the other person's, you know, feelings.
Well, right, because you feel this way.
Right. Then I kind of apologize. Rather than just a blanket true apology. It's 2020. Go to YouTube and just Google how to do an apology. The word if is nowhere in there.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's pretty easy to get that done and do that in a much better fashion. So the disconnect between he and what he was hoping to accomplish with the fans was huge. Because in the end, he only made it worse. So there's just that to start with. I'll let you go from there.
Yeah, very, very similar reaction. It's you're transferring the responsibility. So it's actually not an apology. I agree with you. If you feel that way, I'm sorry. That is significantly different than, you know what, I could have done this better. You know, and I look back on it, and there should have been more open lines of communication. You can really handle it four or five different ways that takes some of the responsibility. And this is like, it's like a popcorn apology. You know, it's bigger than actually the substance of what's inside. Very.
Ooh, wow. That was deep, man.
Very light. It was just, it
I'm
had.
Stealing that, by the way.
Go for it. Yeah. Go for it. Not enough substance there for me. And I think that he is doing what everyone wants. People want some acknowledgement from Jeff Breidich, and he half gave it to you without actually following through with some true meaning and substance. That's what I heard from that clip.
What would you have liked him to say?
Just that this thing has been handled sloppily. You know, and not that I expect him to say that. I'm saying that. So in response to that, and he knows that. This is why we're talking about Jeff Breidich. I would like him to say, in a perfect world, you know, I look back on it, and there's some things I could have done differently, and that I'm going to address with Nolan as soon as I can. You know, not, and we're going to get into some of these other cuts, but something like that, something more forward and forthright. And taking even a smidgen more of accountability than he put out there into a microphone. Like, again, something along the lines of, you know, my communication needed to be better here. And when there's no communication, it leads to speculation. And for that, I'm sorry. Something like that.
Was that hard?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. And it doesn't need to be a full, you know, fall on the sword like mea culpa. It doesn't need to be all that.
It does not need to be.
But it does need to be a little bit more than what he gave.
It does blow my mind that front office types in all sports, heck, in all business, somehow miss that communication is a critical part of your job. And while you want to treat all players fairly, you cannot treat them all the same. And Nolan Arenado is a guy who needs to be treated in a different way than maybe you would treat somebody else. And that's okay. He's earned that on the field. He's earned that with his play. Heck, he's earned it with his contract.
Sure.
So, as the general manager, as the office manager, as the whatever manager title you may have, and you're managing people, your ability to communicate with them, address their concerns, give them some answers, and then also apologize in a clean way when you screw up is literally the most important part of the job. It's not building the roster. It's creating a culture where the roster that you have can be successful. And when you upset the highest paid guy, one of the best played players in one of the best playing players in baseball, you're failing at your job. That's the core of being a manager, is the communication aspect.
Yeah, it's a shame. It's a shame that the greatest player in franchise history may not be with the franchise because of a personal disconnect. And Jeff Breidich was asked about if he and Nolan have sat down yet.
Today was day two. Yesterday was day one with him in camp. You know, we've seen each other. We haven't sat yet. You know, but I trust that we will. I mean, it's early in camp. And, you know, he's just like all the other players. We find time to sit down and interact both with myself and with Buddy. So we'll find that trust. We'll find the right time to do that.
This is that response right there is like part and parcel of the tone deafness that people are pointing to.
Yes.
That you would say, and you heard it, I heard it, anyone who has an actively working brain heard it, where you don't differentiate Nolan from the roster. Like, he like all the other players, you know, we'll find time to sit down. I trust that we will. Not like, yeah, we're going to. It's going to happen probably within the next 24 hours. I look forward to it. He is just like every other player, and he could be the farthest thing from all the other players.
Treat people fairly, but you do not have the requirement to treat them all the same. And I know that's a paraphrasing of a Bill Parcells quote about players, but that's the reality of that. You know, I've coached, I've managed staff, and communication is important, and addressing issues before they get too big, that gives you the chance to deal with the issue instead of now the issue kind of dealing with you and the issue dictating how it's going to be dealt with. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And there's a difference between those two, as opposed to when you jump in early and you're more proactive versus, well, I'll trust we'll have a conversation. Your best player is in the locker room talking to other players about what you're not doing.
Yeah.
And how long do you want that conversation to keep going?
And other media members. I mean, Nolan was talking to like four different media members saying how he was disrespected. This has been a cloud over the whole offseason, and now we're here when these guys are in the same physical space, and like, first of all, the conversation hasn't happened yet, and it was lukewarm about the conversation that will happen. It stinks, Chad.
It does.
It stinks. It stinks. We have more from Jeff Breidich that we will get to. There's also another wrinkle in the CU coaching search that we will pass along. We will do that in the following segment, but first, Chad, there is a Broncos name in the news, and I got to tell you, I have no time or patience for it. We'll take a dive into it next. Chad, there's a Broncos name in the news that I just don't have time for it. And I'm lacking the patience here. You may need to help me. Chad Brown filling in for Brandon Stokely today. Why is Joe Flacco in the news? Why are the Broncos putting out smoke signals on Joe Flacco? Now, they said at the end of the regular season that he'd have the MRI in his injured neck to determine if he needed surgery, and that he'd think about the 2020 season once he had that news. Well, he's reportedly had that MRI, and the results shouldn't stand in the way of his return to the field. Jeremy Fowler of ESPN.com is reporting that the Broncos are confident that Joe Flacco will be healthy enough to play this season. When you saw this headline, when you read it, you thought what?
You know, in a movie, somebody owns a shop of some sort, a restaurant or a dry cleaner, and they walk in the morning and they go over to that sign in the window and they flip it to open, or if it's like a neon sign, they pull the little chain, they turn it on.
Right.
That's exactly what this is. The Broncos just say, hey, we're open for business.
Open for business.
We're open for business, and Joe Flacco is part of that being open for business. And this is the time of year where you do that. Now, I know the Broncos coaches aren't going down to the combine, but I have to assume the front office staff will be down there. So many trades and deals are constructed down at the combine in some of those hotel suites in Indy, or some of the bars in Indy. And now people know this is going to be a topic of discussion, and the Broncos are willing to move Joe Flacco on. They've clearly made the choice that Drew Lock is going to be the guy. I don't think Joe Flacco is going to be a Denver Bronco this season, particularly with his salary. So, hey, here's a guy, he's healthy. He's won games in the NFL. He's won a Super Bowl. Come get him.
Could you see any NFL team making Joe Flacco their plan for 2020?
Maybe as a grooming part of your plan. Now, you know, we all heard these sound bites from Joe last season after Drew Locke was drafted. So he didn't seem like he was like, you know, going to be a coach, a second coach in the quarterback room. But I think at this point, the handwriting is not just on the wall. It's right there, you know, on his mirror in his bathroom. You've got to make a transition from, hey, I'm the guy, I'm the starter, I can go out there and lead teams to the playoffs, to I'm the guy to teach your young guy how to be a pro. And that happens at a different time for everybody, and everyone's acceptance of that role is different. Last year, he was unwilling to accept that role. Does Joe Flacco still want to make $7, $8 million this year, $10 million this year, and be Josh McCown? Well, you can buy yourself 5 or 6 more years, another 50, 60, 70 million bucks if you do that.
Right. He's only 35 years old.
Right.
He could do this for a handful of more years if he embraced that.
Right. Because it would give a team a tremendous amount of confidence. If Joe Flacco is your backup quarterback and your rookie just loses his mind in the first half, well, we can just go with Joe and we can, you know, get the rookie settled down for next week. Rookie gets injured. Your young guy gets injured. We'll go with Joe for a couple of weeks. We'll ride this out. Joe's going to know the offense. He's going to be professional. He's going to be able to go in there and command the huddle. It's not going to be great lights out football, but what backup quarterback in this league is?
You just kind of steady the ship.
It's going to be a very steady ship and a far steadier ship. If Joe Flacco is your backup quarterback, that instantly puts you in the top 6 teams as far as your backup quarterback.
Oh, yeah. Agreed. Which is why, and I don't think it's going to work out here in Denver. I don't think that Joe, if he has an option to go elsewhere, at the end of the day, I think the Broncos are going to cut Joe Flacco. I don't think a team out there is going to give up some, you know, 4th or 5th round pick for Joe, take that salary.
Really?
I don't see that happening.
If there's an agreement that he would take a lesser salary? Because that's part of the deal.
If they restructure the deal, maybe a 5th-round pick? I mean, the most recent context I have is the Broncos traded a 4th-round pick for Flacco, and at that time, it was a contract that didn't have any guaranteed money on it. So that's my most recent frame of reference. If it was a restructured deal and it was like, I don't know, let's just throw out a number. I'll use the number you just said. It's like $7 million.
And I got that because I think in my mind, I think that's what Teddy Bridgewater made last season. I'm trying to look that up right now. So because he would not just be a guy to go in there and kneel down at the end of the game and end of the first half.
Right.
He'd actually be a guy who could win you games at the quarterback position, just as Teddy Bridgewater did. That's a $7 to $10 million a year job.
Yeah,
in the NFL.
I'm looking at it right now. 2019, Teddy Bridgewater yearly cash was just over $7 million.
Okay, so yeah, by my memory, apparently yep. My concussions haven't affected that part of my brain yet.
Good stuff.
Yeah. So if that's what you're looking for, then here's a guy who's available to do that. And I think Joe and his agent are obviously going to push for as much money as they can and try to push that north of $7 million, but it's not going to be 15 or 12. It'll probably be cap out around 10. And if you've got a young quarterback, maybe you drafted him, his cap number is reasonable. So to pay that kind of money for a backup who could steady the ship if things somehow go haywire, that's a value that would be worth it.
Joe, maybe he will go down that road. I remember him at the end of the year saying, I still want to play. Like, I want to play football. My gut says he would be reluctant to fully embrace that role of, like, Mr. Clipboard. I'm here kind of as a player coach. That's what my gut tells me. But if you don't have any other options and you still want to make a couple $1 million, I mean, here's my thing. Joe, you know how much money Joe Flacco has made in his career? This is insane.
Like $140 million, right?
$166 million.
Good for Joe.
I mean, that is amazing for Joe. That is generational wealth. you're 35 years old, you've won a Super Bowl, you played, you know, 12 seasons in the National Football League. Do you want to go down that road of humbling yourself after being a franchise quarterback for a decade in Baltimore, coming here, flaming out? I mean, the first half of the year was hard to watch. You know, threw one more touchdown than he did an interception. It was just brutal. Sacked an absurd amount of times. I think the number was 26 times in 8 games. Do you just say, I've made my money, I've won my Super Bowl, don't have to work again, I'm not being a backup? Like, I see at the end of the day Joe going down that road. Just like, I've had enough.
My standard in these circumstances is always my experience with Jerry Rice in Seattle. I was going into year 10, and I was still playing at a high level, but clearly much closer to the end than I was to the beginning of my career.
Sure.
And
how old were you here?
Probably 32 or 33, so year 10.
Okay.
And Jerry Rice comes and joins us, and Jerry Rice still loves football so much that he's going to be a backup to Corn Robinson, a backup to Daryl Jackson. And that you just said, and I know we're on radio so people can't see your face, but it was a face that went along with that And that was my initial reaction. But then after watching Jerry for that entire season, my respect for Jerry actually went several notches higher.
Really?
Because do you play the game for your own personal success, or do you play the game because you flat out love the game? And it was watching Jerry, I've completely flipped it from, I'm going to go out on top. My last season is going to be a Pro Bowl season.
Right.
I'm not going to, no one's going to see me out there being a backup to, I love football. I played it since I was 6 years old. And at some point, yeah, Father Time is undefeated. But if I still got a value to a team and I still love football, then I'm going to go out there and do that. So, yeah, year 15 in New England, I was a backup linebacker. I played special teams. I sat in the front row of the meeting. I took good notes. Bill saw me working with the young guys. I got all my weight workouts done. I brought the young guys to watch tape with me. That was my role. I still got to play football. I was on one of the greatest teams of all time. So I take away much more from that experience than I actually gave to that experience.
And very interesting.
And I made a couple million bucks.
I was going to say, and that's a big part of the story here too, is like you have this one window in your life where you get those checks where, you know, it looks like a phone number.
Yeah.
And there's always more to be made. I mean, yeah. Warren Buffett wants more money.
And there's nothing wrong with that. So I understand your initial reaction, I also, my experience was completely changed by watching Jerry Rice, who I consider to be the greatest of all time, do what he did for the Seattle Seahawks. And I thought, that's how I'm going to go out.
That's a great story.
I'm going to go out with love for the game and not, I've got to somehow keep my status up. Jerry Rice, guess what, is still the greatest of all time.
Sure.
He came the next year to the Broncos and couldn't make the squad.
Right.
Does anyone care about that?
No.
You know, when I see people around town or when I travel around in NFL circles, no one says, hey, man, you were only active for 5 games with the Patriots your last season. No, they remember when I had 4.5 sacks when I was with the Steelers.
Sure.
They remember all those great times. But I remember those lessons, and I remember the experience of being on that special team and playing not for money, not for glory, not for Pro Bowls, not for all pros, but for the pure love of the game.
And maybe at that point, the scale is tilting where you're giving to the game more than you're getting.
Yes.
At that point.
Yes.
That's awesome. That's a great story. Well, on the heels of you saying that, if Joe Flacco loves football and he's willing to humble himself as a backup and maybe give more than he's getting, even though he will be, especially as a quarterback, even in a reserve role, will be paid handsomely. Here's what I wonder as it relates to the Broncos. If he did that and he went and vocalized that, would it be a fit here with the Broncos? If he embraced that role? Because, and I heard Stink saying this morning, it's been years since the Broncos had the veteran backup at the quarterback spot that was the sort of mentor. The backups have been, you know, Trevor Siemian, Paxton Lynch, you know, Brandon Allen's, these type of guys that have been the reserve role that, you know, hadn't played too much NFL football. Joe Flacco has had 12 years of playing NFL football. If he vocalized that, would it be a fit here with the Broncos?
I can't see why not. I can't see why not.
On a restructured deal, I should have.
Yes. The deal would have to be restructured before a coaching staff that clearly values experience on the coaching staff. It's hard to believe that all these older, experienced coaches would look at that position in a way that we're not looking at it now. Here's an experienced guy who can be that great voice in the room. Maybe he can no longer physically do it in that same way, but he can talk about it. He can coach it. He can walk it through. And we all saw flashes from Drew Lock that's very tantalizing. But everyone, not even a casual football fan, can say, hey, man, you got some footwork stuff to do. You know, the first couple games of having the inability to take his eyes off his wristband, you've got some playbook playbook understanding to go through. Joe Flacco can help on all of those. So if Joe Flacco's willing to accept that role and humble himself, and I don't even look at it as humbling yourself. It's just putting the love of the game first. It's just simply putting love and team first above yourself. And I think it's a transition for any player who wants to play a long time has to go through. If Joe's willing to make that transition, then why would you not? Instantly, like I said, you have a top five or six backup quarterback situation across the entire league. And we know, based on just stats, quarterbacks go down.
They do. And I'm glad you said that, because I was getting ready to go down that road. If you look at even just the recent, call it last 5 years, just here in Denver, Colorado, you talk about how important the backup quarterback has been. It's outside of the 2018 regular season, where Case Keenum, I'm pretty sure, started like every single game. We needed a backup this past year. Joe Flacco hurts his neck, gets done for the year. Drew Lock was hurt to start the year, mm-hmm. but Joe Flacco has the neck. He goes down, misses the rest of the season. In the 2017 season, Lord, we had to change quarterbacks three different times, at Trevor to Paxton to Brock, then back to Trevor. And
both guys, all three guys started at least twice.
Right.
And were benched.
It was legendary.
Yes.
It's just a legendary carousel of a season.
But like the legendary, not bad meaning bad, but bad meaning really bad.
Really, really super duper bad. You go back to the 2016 season, where Trevor Siemian got hurt. Paxton Lynch has to come in. I think he played against like the Falcons, and I forget who else. The season before that was the Super Bowl season, where, of course, you know, Peyton gets replaced by Brock. Brock then gets replaced by Peyton. So in the last 5 years, there's only been one season where the backup quarterback didn't have to play football. So it's important. And if you needed Joe Flacco for a three-game stretch, let's say the Broncos after seven games are 4-3, and Drew Lock has a high ankle sprain, and he's going to miss 4 weeks of football. One of the weeks are going to be a bye, so we need a backup for three football games. Do you trust Joe Flacco to come in and try to go 2-1? I kind of do, even despite how poor the play was through eight games last year. When you're talking about within the framework of a backup, I would trust Joe to play three games, just like I would trust Trevor Siemian to play three. Do I trust Brandon Allen to go 2-1? No, I don't. But on a restructured deal, if he embraced that process, I think you could kind of talk yourself into this working. But by the way, I don't think any of this is going to work. I don't think he's going to be with the Broncos. But if for whatever reason the chips fell this way, I think I'd be comfortable with it if all those like boxes were checked.
I'm with you on that, but yeah, I think the end of what you said there is probably the most important, because we started this segment talking about the Broncos put up the open for business sign on Joe Flacco. So they're obviously looking on to what kind of trade value they can get, what can they get back in compensation. And then if that doesn't happen, then I think they revert back to, hey, let's reduce your deal, put it in a more reasonable category for a backup quarterback, and we'd love to have you back. Backing up Drew Lock.
Yeah, and let me say this. Even if it's not Joe Flacco, if I had a preference, and I happen to, so I'll share it. My preference is that the Broncos do go the veteran route instead of the Brandon Allen type of framework. Drew Lock is a young player who's played five football games. That's it. He also happens to be like the loosey-goosey, you know, young charisma type of guy. I wouldn't mind at all for And when I say this, I'm not calling Drew Lock immature, but I am saying let's sprinkle in some utmost maturity with a guy who's been in the league for 7 to 10 years. I don't know who that guy is. Is it Joe Flacco? Is it Josh McCown? Is it Case Keenum? And I would actually prefer Case Keenum for a couple different reasons, but it, just sprinkling in that just pro's pro, that when Drew looks to the left of him or to the right of him, he knows that guy, whoever that is going to be the Chad Brown with the Patriots sitting in the front row, taking the notes, pointing out stuff to Drew Lock on film. Hey, look at this. Hey, did you get your weight room work stuff done? We got to get that done. That almost overarching like umbrella of mentorship. I would love to skip the Brandon Allen, Paxton Lynch. And I know Paxton's not a great example because they drafted him. But just, you know, Brandon Allen's the best example. A guy who hadn't played NFL football before, hadn't even been active on a game day as a backup, and he was your plan to be your backup quarterback. I would love to avoid that this time around.
On the text line, the geniuses on the text line are watching XFL football and saying, I'd rather have PJ, what's his last name, PJ?
Oh, Lord.
PJ Walker.
Yeah, PJ Walker, right.
Be the backup over Joe Flacco. So, when you see...
if you're talking about a XFL backup quarterback and he plays for the Houston Roughnecks, PJ Walker was a backup, or rather, I think even a third string with the Colts for a couple of years. He played at Temple. He's still young. He's 24 years old. But still, like, and I heard the fellas on the afternoon drive saying this, if you're in the XFL, that means you're not a third-string NFL player. If you had a chance to be the third-string backup quarterback, you would rather be that than playing for the Houston Roughnecks. And you think about the 32 quarterbacks, their 32 backups, their 32 third-stringers, what order are you on before you get to Philip Walker? Like the 116th best quarterback walking around? No thanks. Try to bring in Case Keenum, something like that. That's my preference.
Yeah, the XFL thing I think is going to skew folks who don't really have a discerning football eye. Joe Flacco is a better quarterback than PJ Walker. There's no conversation had there.
If Joe Flacco was in the XFL, he'd be unequivocally head and shoulders above every single other quarterback.
Right. And some of the folks in the text line point out Joe Flacco can't move. Movement's not his strong suit at this point, clearly. And if the Drew Lock offense involves movement, rolling out, bootlegs, things like that, they'll certainly have to tune the offense down for Joe Flacco. But I'd rather tune it down for Joe Flacco and put him in a position where he can be successful and have a guy who can, again, walk in, steady the ship, command the huddle, deal with a two-minute situation without peeing in his pants.
Right.
Than somebody else some young guy who's trying to figure it out as he goes.
And that's why, you know, what you just said, that's why if I could have my choice, the pick of the litter, give me Case Keenum as the backup, a guy who is mobile, a guy who played in this exact offense under Pat Shurmur, who can be the coach. He's already got the framework already built in to his mental. And he had been that backup role for the entirety of his career before John tried to make him a franchise quarterback. And now he's back to the reserve role. So the guy's been in the league for like 10 years. 9 of them, he's been in the role that I'd be asking him to play. He's already played in that system. And he's mobile enough. And if you needed him to start for that 3-game stretch, can Case Keenum go 2-1? He sure can.
Now, wasn't he 50-50 touchdowns, interceptions? And Joe Flacco was one more interception to touchdowns?
Case, when he was with the Broncos and started in 2018, it was 18 touchdowns and 15 interceptions.
Okay. For the most of the season, he was almost 1-for-1. I think in the end, he got a little better with the touchdown ratio.
Yeah, Joe, this past year, in 8 football games, was 6 touchdowns and 5 interceptions. I mean, if you're in the National Football League and you're not averaging,
that's 18-15. That's the same as Case Keenum.
It'd be 12-10 because Flacco in 8 games threw 6 touchdowns and 5 interceptions.
8 games. I was multiplying it by 3 to get 18-15. Like
so think about that.
Same ratio though. The ratio is the same.
The ratio is the same. Mm-hmm. The ratio is the same. But think about that. If you prorate Joe Flacco's 8 games to 16, and you're just multiplying it by 2, it's not like he played 2 games and you're multiplying it by 8. He played half an NFL season. He was on pace to throw 12 touchdowns. That is not good.
This offense.
Oh, my goodness.
Also, on the text line talking about Brandon Allen, this offense didn't go out there and light it up with Brandon Allen either.
Sure.
This is one of the lowest scoring offenses in the NFL. They were terrible offensively until the last couple games of the season. And that Houston game skewed the numbers tremendously over Drew Locke's five wins.
But I'll say this. I'll say this in response to that. The 3 points that they mustered in a snowstorm skewed it the other way, too, against Kansas City in that blizzard. I think they find a way. Was it 3 points? Wasn't it 3 points? I think they find a way to score more than 3 points week 15. It was 23-3. Like a foot of snow out there. So that'd be my response to the average.
Well, if we're going
to
go with the Olympics, eliminate the low one, eliminate the high one. They weren't very good. We all know that.
It got better.
It did.
It got better, but it needs to surpass where it was.
Yeah.
But the fact that the Broncos couldn't score more than 24 points for more than a calendar year, then he did it twice in just the five games at Drew Locke. I'm excited about Drew Locke. I hope that the guys that are the decision makers inside of Dove Valley are as excited about Drew Locke as I am. Because as it pertains to this Joe Flacco conversation, they loved Joe. And if for what
you loved Joe.
I did not love Joe.
You did.
No, I did not love Joe.
No, it was Case.
It was Case.
You were, yes, a Case guy. That's right.
I was a Case guy. When we were doing this like wacko for Flacco, I had to come on and say, guys, I'm not wacko for Flacco. I don't know how anyone's wacko for Flacco. Case, that was a different story. That was like a little, that was a summer love.
Very nostalgic, very romantic. You were
just a brief period of time
going through the lilies and on a spring day.
Can't quit you. Well, he was coming off a season where it was 3-1 touchdown interception ratio. I mean, 3-1.
You were standing outside his window with a boombox over your head.
Yes. If you're a bird, I'm a bird, Case. All right. Good stuff. Should John Elway have altered the contract timetable with one specific Bronco? I want to dive into this conversation next.
Columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.